From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, a blizzard hits the Northeast and the Mohawk Valley and Southern Tier were ground zero. A report from Great Lakes Radio on this deadly winter for snowmobilers. And our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on President Trump firing 46 U.S. attorneys, including New York's Preet Bharara. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Some of the areas hit hardest by the winter storm this week were the Mohawk Valley and Southern Tier. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has an update from the scene in a few communities that were still digging out from knee-deep snow.
Earlier this week, forecasts called for New York City and Long Island to be hardest hit by the winter storm. But it was areas of upstate New York that got hit with more than 2 feet of snow. Governor Andrew Cuomo appeared in Binghamton Wednesday and said the snow removal equipment that had done its work downstate would be headed to Broome County in the Southern Tier to assist.
So we are now redeploying assets from Long Island and New York City, which are basically in good shape, to other parts upstate that need help. Broome County, Southern Tier, was one of the most severely hit by this storm. So we're in the process of bringing in more National Guard and more state assets.
The governor said 100 additional plows and 100 National Guard troops would be sent to assist Broome County. A countywide travel ban was lifted at noon Wednesday. About 60 miles northeast, Oneonta was also buried in snow, said Mayor Gary Herzig.
We need to remove snow from the sides of the street. In some cases, we're talking about little more than one lane. In other cases, it's causing a view obstruction. So we need to work on trying to remove snow from the sides of the roads, and we can't do that if cars are parked there.
Herzig said snow removal could take several days. Much of the Mohawk Valley was also covered in at least 2 feet of snow. Rick Sager, deputy director of Montgomery County Emergency Management, credited the countywide travel ban with helping to keep roads safe and clear.
The travel ban worked fantastic. People really paid attention to what we asked them to do, and I think that helped a lot in keeping the roads clear. Snowplows didn't have to work around cars in the ditch or traffic in front of them or behind them. Those guys were able to get out there and just do their job.
The National Weather Service is reporting snowfall totals from Tuesday morning and Wednesday between 12 and as much as 30 inches. The winter storm that slammed the Northeast brought traffic to a halt and caused many municipalities to declare snow emergencies.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
It's been a deadly winter for snowmobilers in New York State. A story now of two men who disappeared one night after taking a late snowmobile ride out on one of New York's Finger Lakes and the search to find them. Here's Great Lakes Today's Veronica Volk.
Canisius Lake is the westernmost of the Finger Lakes and one of the smallest. It's about a mile across and 8 miles long. Cameron Copeland is looking out over the water, reminiscing about his brother, Chris.
He was always outside in the water between scuba diving, skiing, wakeboarding, snow skiing, snowboarding, riding dirt bikes, riding four-wheelers.
Chris was 40 years old. He had shaggy brown hair and a wide smile, and his Facebook is full of videos of him doing these stunts, like ice bucket challenges or mountain bike riding over picnic tables. In one, taken in January 2014, Chris is out on the frozen lake with his younger daughter, Ariana. She's riding a mini four-wheeler.
You're running me over!
Chris lived in a house on the northwest shore of Canisius Lake, and one of his favorite winter activities was snowmobiling across the flat, frozen surface. Which brings us to February 11th of this year. Chris and his friend Jason Fluitt got a ride home from a local bar around 3 a.m. The next day, Chris didn't show up to his job as a taxi driver. His brother says he wasn't too worried at first.
Knowing Chris, he could have been off in Florida or could have been on vacation somewhere, because that's what Chris would randomly go somewhere.
But 24 hours after he was last seen, Cameron Copeland still hadn't heard from his brother, and Jason was missing too. Cameron contacted the police. Livingston County Sheriff Tom Doherty says they immediately filed a missing persons report.
When they checked the apartment, he was not there, no one was around.
But they did find one clue.
One of the snowmobiles was missing.
By morning, a police drone had picked up snowmobile tracks going out onto the lake. A few hours later, they recovered two helmets from the ice.
All the pieces were lining up, really putting them in the lake.
That night would have been a dangerous one to ride on the lake. The north end was frozen, but the ice started to break up near the middle. It was dark, and there was a light snow falling, making it harder to see soft spots and thin ice.
We figured that their plan was to just go out and do a quick loop and come right back, but they got off course and went too far south and went out into the mushed ice, which then turned into open water.
The sheriff's office launched a search with dozens of people, police officers and firefighters on the ice and in boats, divers combing the frigid lake. Copeland's family hunkered down in a house nearby with a big window overlooking the water. Cameron says the waiting was hard.
They just kind of kept each other's minds busy, kind of hoping that he wasn't in there, but we all had that 99% positive that he was. We just kind of the 1% hope that he wasn't.
Jason's family was in Phoenix, Arizona, when they heard what was happening. At his memorial service, his mother, Sandy, recalled hearing the news from a friend who lived near the lake.
After I got off the phone with him, I just kept screaming and screaming and just screaming.
Like Chris, Sandy's son was 40, had a daughter, loved being outdoors. Both men were recovered from the lake on February 22nd, 11 days after they went missing. The families and the sheriff's office say the biggest factor in this tragedy was likely an incredibly warm winter. For Great Lakes Today, I'm Veronica Volk on Canisius Lake.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, quite a week, and one of the biggest news items was the blizzard that hit upstate New York. Now, it was forecast to hit the coast primarily in New York City and Philadelphia and up to Boston and off the coast of Maine. And we didn't see it hit there. Rather, it hit up toward Binghamton, the southern tier, central New York. Even the capital region got hit pretty hard. And of course, western Massachusetts and parts of the North Country. But the article in the New York Times that I'm looking at says New York plays it safe with storm response and it pays off. In New York City, the arrival of a major snowstorm offers high-stakes challenges for state and city officials. This time, for once, there were few complaints. And they talked to a number of people, all in New York City, seemingly forgetting, as what we saw during the storm, that the storm hit harder upstate and forced the governor, for example, to send plows from New York City, where they had gathered, all the way upstate to deal with the problem up here.
David, that's right. And everything you've said is just so. Look, there's always going to be a balance between upstate New York and New York City. In this case, we all know that Mayor Lindsay, or who Mike Quill, the old union organizer, used to call Mayor Lindsley, got into terrific trouble because he couldn't pick up the snow in Queens. That lesson has been played over and over again on hundreds of politicians in New York who know you don't really want to screw this thing up. So all the resources were marshaled to take care of New York City, and then upstate New York came. And this, of course, doesn't help the governor, because the governor has not been doing well up in the upstate New York. You will remember in the Democratic primary, he lost quite badly in many upstate counties, if not all of them, to Zephyr Teachout. And, you know, this is something that we're seeing again and again, and he's been trying to shore up his upstate voting population. And now, one more sort of symbol that all are not equal. So you have all of these trucks and plows ready to go in New York City, and then when it doesn't materialize, up the thruway they go, and it's not lost on many upstaters.
Well, starting last weekend, we learned that the Trump administration had asked 46 U.S. attorneys appointed by the Obama administration to resign, one of them being New York's Preet Bharara from the Southern District. There's quite a few investigations going on right now. He promptly said he would not resign, and then he was fired. And since then, there's been, I guess, a firestorm of coverage of this. And when asked about it, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said, you know, I don't really know. I didn't follow the situation. There's a transition from one administration to the next. But beyond that, I haven't followed it.
My commentary? Ha! You mean Andrew Cuomo, who looks at every jot and tittle of every single newspaper story that comes out about him. And believe me, I know about that. Wasn't following the firing of Preet Bharara, the man who brought the charges against his cronies that have been surrounding him all this time, and he's expected to have to testify, and both Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos have been convicted and on their way. Ha! That's all I got to say when this guy, Governor Cuomo, says he wasn't aware of this firing of Preet Bharara. Now, of course, it raises some very interesting questions, at least to me it does, because Preet Bharara is hearing a volley of people all around the place who are saying, run, Preet, run. And what are they talking about running for? They're talking about running for governor. And when Preet Bharara says, this whole thing reminds me of the Moreland Act Commission, a definite shot right across the bow of Andrew Cuomo, he's saying, I understand that there are those people, when you get too close in investigations, who are going to want to kill the Moreland Commission, or basically, I think he's saying, kill me. It's interesting because there was a spate of, I think, sort of interesting newspaper stories laying out why Preet Bharara wasn't as good as he was. I wonder whether that wasn't something to do with the governor of New York, who, of course, wasn't paying any attention, he says, saying, okay, if this guy runs against me, he'll get upstate New York, and he may well get a huge number of people in New York City, and that would be the end of me in a primary.
You spoke with the Daily News' Ken Lovett about all this, and one of the things that Ken spoke about was the idea that the establishment, quote, really hates Bharara because of being a sort of white knight and coming after them.
We saw it with Elliot Spitzer. Now, Elliot Spitzer got into a little bit of trouble here. It was interesting that if you saw client number nine, you saw at least one of these guys from the street, from one of the major insurance companies going, we got him, we got him. Well, let me tell you, Preet Bharara has not looked for favor with anybody, and these groups are not happy with him. And the major people who have been prosecuted on the street, Wall Street, for insider trading, and as these investigations go forward, there are a lot of sleepless nights for people who thought that they would always be protected and always be okay. So, from my perspective, I understand that there are a lot of people who would like to see Preet Bharara gone, who wanted Preet Bharara gone, so there could be business as usual. And with the current president of the United States and the number of people from Goldman Sachs and other institutions in his cabinet and surrounding him, am I surprised to see Preet Bharara being fired? Nah.
Finally, did you see that the Independent Democratic Caucus conference in New York State that has split off from the Assembly and Senate has come out with their own budget proposal?
Well, David, they're in a lot of trouble. The IDC, or the Independent Conference or Caucus under Jeff Klein, they're Democrats who got elected as Democrats. There are those who believe they have sold their souls and become traitors so that they could become the head of a committee or get some extra money for leadership roles, which they would not have had if they stayed back with the Democratic, regular Democrats in the Senate. But now, you know, you got Andrew Cuomo obviously moving left as fast as his legs can take him. And everybody knows that in the beginning, there was a wink and a nod and that it was okay for the IDC and Klein to play the role that they are. Some people even thought it was racist because of the lack of people of color in the IDC group. So now, of course, they are really watching out because their constituents, I believe, are catching on. Hey, what are you doing with those Republicans? They're voting against what we want. So I think that to some degree, this is a very dangerous time for them. And I think there are many people who think, well, that's good. They should be held accountable for what they've been doing.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The legislature's One House budgets make some changes to Governor Cuomo's $163 million proposal to offer free tuition at public colleges in New York to some middle-class students. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Governor Cuomo's plan would have the state pay for the tuition of students at public colleges and universities whose combined family income is up to $125,000 a year. That's when the plan is fully phased in 2 years. It does not cover room and board, books, and mandatory fees. Those can cost students up to twice as much as the $6,470 a year in tuition costs at the state university system and $6,333 at the city university system. Cuomo's point man for the free tuition plan, Jim Malatris, spoke at a forum sponsored by the budget watchdog group, the Empire Center.
This is not free college. This is not a free college proposal, but a lot of people say it's free college. This is free tuition.
Malatris, until recently, was Governor Cuomo's chief of staff. He's now president of SUNY's Rockefeller Institute. The plan, known as the Excelsior Scholarship Program, includes incentives to ensure that more students graduate on time, including requiring that each year students complete the full-time requirement of 30 credits annually. Mark Cohen, the student assembly president for the State University of New York, says the plan addresses the fact that a bachelor's degree has become the new high school diploma and is necessary for most types of decent-paying jobs. But he says he wishes there was more in it to help recent graduates who owe tens of thousands of dollars in student debt, among other things.
More needs to be done. That we're not going to take our hand away because we're given this $163 million of new money.
Another negative, at least in the eyes of New York's more than 100 private colleges, is that they are completely left out of the plan. Mary Beth LeBate is the head of the Commission on Independent Colleges and Universities.
Free is hard to compete with.
She predicts that some private colleges will close and others will lay off faculty, impacting the already unsteady upstate economy. She says some private colleges are already postponing planned capital projects in anticipation of the potential loss of students to public colleges. LeBate says it would be better to expand New York's existing tuition assistant plan, known as TAP, to provide more money and to cover New Yorkers with higher incomes. TAP can be used at both public and private schools.
This state has a long history of treating all students the same, giving students financial aid through the TAP program and allowing them to choose which college, public or private, fits for them.
Malatris says the governor's plan is a starting point. He expects it to be changed in the upcoming budget negotiations that will intensify over the next few weeks.
And I'm sure there's going to be tweaks, changes, enhancements to that program.
Senate Republicans, in their One House budget resolution, alter the governor's free tuition plan. They take the suggestion of the private colleges and instead enlarge the existing TAP program. The GOP plan would up the maximum aid award to $5,500 a year and increase income eligibility to $125,000 a year. The Senate plan would add new credit requirements to TAP to encourage graduation in 4 years. The Assembly Democrats, in their budget plan, adopt much of the governor's proposal and expand upon it. Speaker Carl Hastie says his proposal would increase the income eligibility to families making $150,000 a year.
And under our plan, it'll be almost 70% of the resident student families will be able to have their children attend college in New York. Tuition free.
The assembly plan also expands TAP to allow part-time students to be eligible for the aid. It also addresses student debt, offering a plan to help graduates who owe money to refinance. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
The Adirondack Park Agency is reviewing classification options for the recently obtained Boreas Ponds Tract in the Central Adirondacks. Many expected the agency's board to consider final classification during its March meeting and then make a final decision in April. But the board did not discuss the Boreas Ponds classification, spurring further debate over use of the lands near the high peaks of the Adirondacks. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The Boreas Ponds Tract was purchased by New York State in 2016. In the Central Adirondacks, the 20,758 acres include the 320-acre Boreas Ponds, which are currently surrounded by Forest Preserve. The Adirondack Park Agency has not yet classified the lands. During its February meeting, APA staff gave presentations on classification criteria, environmental, and technical issues related to the land's classification. During the March board meeting, APA Executive Director Terry Martino briefly mentioned continuing work to classify Boreas Ponds.
Staff are continuing to work to compile all the material that will be part of the package and to respond to the more than 11,000 public comments we received. As we continue our consultations with the department, we look at finalizing the extensive material that we have before us.
The APA has presented four alternatives or classification options for the tract. The Adirondack Council prefers a wilderness classification that would restrict motorized access. Some groups want it to include a non-motorized buffer of 7 miles, but Council Executive Director Willie Janeway says a 1 mile buffer is acceptable.
Make sure the Boreas Ponds of Boreas River to the south get the gold standard of protection as wilderness and complement that with some investments in local communities. That fits really well with the wilderness protection for the Boreas Ponds.
The Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board supports the wild forest designation in Alternative 1. That option allows some motorized access while retaining an essentially wild character. Executive Director Fred Monroe notes there is already significant road infrastructure in the tract due to its past logging history.
They were all designed and built for 50-ton log trucks, and we think they're well-suited for bicycling and also for handicapped access. And the local governments believe that the best help for tourism would be if people can actually access that, which isn't the case with the wilderness.
The APA has been criticized for offering only four options for classification of the Boreas lands. Both the Adirondack Council and the Local Government Review Board agree there should be more alternatives. Willie Janeway says the APA's plans are too similar.
There were not true alternatives. We would have expected a more complete wilderness protection versus some sort of false partial wilderness plans. Even though we don't support it, we would have expected some more complete non-wilderness proposals to cover the full spectrum. That's how the process is supposed to work. There has been pretty uniform criticism of that process, but there's an opportunity for the Park Agency as they take the next step to look at those different alternatives and then zero in on a plan that is supported by the science and the law, and we expect them to do that.
Fred Monroe says the alternatives were too limited.
Specifically, there should have been more options for the McIntyre East and McIntyre West properties, which are very close to the Boreas Ponds property. All of those were just one option, just wilderness. We think there should be a whole range of options.
Other concerns raised as the classification of the Boreas Ponds Tract is considered include whether dams on the Boreas Ponds Tract are relevant to a wilderness classification. Some groups have also pointed to what they see as inadequate mapping of old logging roads and believe more detail would reveal moldering bridges, washed out culverts, and overgrown roads. The agency has said it would try to put out a plan for the Boreas Ponds this spring.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1711. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.